Air quality's interesting. Sound quality's interesting. It's all going to be interesting. It's the news, the interesting news, according to me. Yeah. Here we are this morning. It is the news, according to me. It is Thursday, July 23rd, 10:46 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, in case you're confused. It is East Coast time. We got, what do we got going on here this morning? We've got a lot of things going on. We have, I forgot to turn the mic, though. There we go, turn the mic thing on. There's okay. There's, everything's up and running now. I had one little button I didn't push yet there. Just get things going. We have, I'm just going to jump right into the show here. We got to go walk the dogs before it gets too hot, apparently. Been informed by the powers that be. There are powers that be upstairs in the house here. I'm down in the basement. And in case you hadn't noticed, my you probably will notice, hopefully you'll notice, that my voice is not what it was. I have not done my nasal wash for the day, but I've been doing it here the last couple of days. The smoke apparently had an effect on my sinuses, and it's the smoky air from the fires up in Canada. Thank you for all the particles that you've, all the pollution that you put into the air. The more pollution in the air over the last week than has probably been done for the last year from all the coal plants in the world. Just saying. Well, I have, I don't know what the amount of pollution. I noticed that there were times when my eyes would kind of water a little bit from all from the harshness of that smoky stuff. And I can sit in front of a campfire. What's kind of weird about it? I would sit in front of a campfire, and I can for a whole weekend, I can be camping for a whole week or whatever. I can be camping and get smoke in my face and everything else. Clothes smell like smoke. Everything smells like smoke. And my sinuses don't act like they are right now. My sinuses are. They really went nuts over that week there. I don't know what was going on there, but it affects my voice. It affects everything because I'm going to talk about some real interesting things here. I've got, I get sinus drainage from the sinus stuff that goes on, and then you get that drainage going down in your throat, and it just affects your, you know, it makes everything, you know, inflames everything, basically. You get inflammation everywhere, all kinds of things, but it, yeah, so that's kind of what's going on. I think that's what's going on with me this week. I don't know. A whole lot of weird things happening anyway. But for some reason, the bots didn't come through for me. I think there may be something wrong with my computer. I need to go and check on it because it's not responding to anything right now. My little Odie agent is not doing anything, and I don't know what's happening there. I just sent him a text message, and he didn't respond. He's unresponsive. Just put it that way. And I think that, I may need to check up on the old computer up there. It might have gotten unplugged I probably got unplugged somehow. That would be my guess. And the battery probably went dead. That's the one nice thing about having an autonomous agent on a laptop is that there's a battery backup. I've got I'm working on another one that's going to be on a Mac Mini. And of course, if the power goes out, there's nothing there. You have to have some kind of a, what do they call it, an IPC or whatever it is you put on there, the little power thing, and it goes through. It's like a battery-powered thing, battery backup thing. Is it battery? Is it BBI, whatever it's called. Anyway, so that, yeah, and that little Odie agent, he comes up, he scours the internet and asks for, you know, he's the one who comes up with the questions for all these little bots that we have on the show here. But I had yesterday's bots that I didn't use because there wasn't a show yesterday. I don't know if you noticed or not. I've been noticing on days I have shows, apparently there's a lot more listeners. Imagine that. Imagine that happening. It is kind of getting to a point where it might be coming. There's a critical mass point where a certain number of listeners causes the algorithms to be pushed forward. I think I'm getting close to a minor point with that. We'll see how it goes. I think, in fact, speaking of that, let me just go click over here real quick to the analytics portion. I'll probably have to re-sign into this crazy thing. Oh, no, I didn't have to. Yeah. Even on this, on both platforms, listenership is up. I just kind of wanted to look at the geographic stats are always kind of interesting. It's kind of interesting to see what kind of, well, there's fewer countries now in the last 30 days. France is still in the running. The UK, Ireland, Ireland, nope. Finland, yeah, Australia, of course, New Zealand, Japan, a lot in Japan. Interesting stuff. Now, Bangladesh and that whole thing there is kind of all of a sudden gone. Now, it could be VPNs. I don't know. It could be. There's none in Canada right now in the last 30 days. Is it 30 days? Whatever it is. Yeah, so it's just kind of interesting how it kind of fluctuates. At Tokyo, Chiyoda City, Tokyo, apparently, is one of the top cities up there. It's Sayville, New York. Fort Wayne, Indiana, Los Angeles, California. Lakewood, New Jersey, Salisbury, Maryland. Wappingers Falls. I think that's up in the Syracuse area. Evansville, Indiana. Boston, Massachusetts, Henderson. I wonder if it's because I've mentioned these places in Hong Kong, Kowloon, Hong Kong. Goshen, Indiana got on the map there. It says it goes on the map. What do you know? Dale, Indiana, Newcastle, Maine. It's kind of interesting to see. Anyway, it's come some of the cities. Vietnam's not on here anymore for some reason. They've gone. I doubt if anybody would be using a VPN coming out of Vietnam. It's interesting that Hanoi was, Hanoi and some other cities there. But anyway, it's interesting stuff. Anyway, in my cup this morning, I've got to get going here. In my cup, I have chai with Almond Joy Creamer. That's what it's going to be for a while because I think I've got 3 or 4 containers of this stuff. It takes me about a month to get through a container. So it'll be a few months. That'll be the standard go-to, other than when I'm on a trip. Speaking of trips, I'll be here today, tomorrow, and then Monday, I don't know where I will be. It'll be the last trip that I'll have that'll be the whole Monday-Tuesday thing where I get done on Wednesdays. I'll be starting on Wednesdays, I believe, or something. I can't remember. I have to look at it again, see what's going on with it. Where's my calendar? Just because I know you need to know. This is information that you need to know. In my backup cup at the moment, I have something wonderful. I still have my homemade sweet peach tea with peaches in it. My cup doesn't have any peaches in it, but it does have... here we go. Oh, yeah, I'll be able to do a show from Manhattan. I'll be coming from Manhattan. And then the following morning, it'll be Columbia, Missouri. There probably will be a show actually on every day next week. And probably the week after. I start my traveling on Thursdays after this. I have a week off basically in between. And then I start traveling on Thursdays. Which means I will probably have shows up until Thursday and even Friday, possibly. I have to look at my trips. And then I've got vacation for about a month after the middle of the month. So after the 17th of next month, that'll be shows. It might be kind of sporadic because there will be some traveling involved where I don't have an opportunity to do any kind of recording. All kind of depends on how that goes. If I'm on the boat, it's kind of hard to do a show from the boat. Maybe. Well, we'll see how that goes. It's possible. It kind of depends on where we're at, what's happening with our vacation time, so what our travels are like at that point. Nonetheless, I need some time off occasionally. So in my backup cup, I've got this tea. So what we have going on there, I didn't even pull up our other possibilities here for the songs that we can play. Well, I'm going to play the... play this little ditty. We'll be right back, and we'll talk. Let's jump right into the show. We'll start off with our callers, and we'll see how that goes. Right after this little message, I think if we can play this, I think I can play this. We'll see how it goes. So let's see if make sure it's not too loud.
Before we get started, here's what you should know. Welcome to the show. I'm glad you tuned in. I've got things to say and I don't know where to
first. A word, a little tiny word from me. This is entertainment, not a medical degree. I'm not a doctor,
not a doctor,
not a lawyer,
not a lawyer,
not a financial counselor.
Nope, nope,
these are my opinions, just my take on things, not professional advice. Read the fine print, please, I'm here for your enjoyment. Nothing more, nothing less, but definitely don't sue me. Woo. I've given you my best. I might sound convincing when I get on a roll. And yeah, I googled that, so maybe I am on a scroll. But for the real stuff, your body, your wallet, your rights, call a professional and maybe tune in Friday nights. Oh,
opinions,
opinions,
just opinions,
just my thoughts
for entertainment,
just entertainment.
That's the shot.
Now that we've covered all the legal stuff and more, let's get the show started. Woo! That's what you came here for.
What's wrong with you people?
I need to settle down here. We have here we are. Let's just take a break. Think about it. Think about what we're doing here. I have I am hyper this morning. I don't know why. There's no reason for it. There's absolutely no reason for it, other than just the day is slipping past, and it's already halfway through it. There's a Jeep thing I want to go to tonight. There's this thing called the Cruise Inn over at this restaurant that's usually a pretty big deal over. And it's going to be perfect weather, I think, this afternoon. It's like 70 degrees and sunny. I'll take the Jeep. It's Jeep night at the Cruise Inn thing. They have a Jeep night, I think, twice a summer. Every Thursday night they have this thing where it's like a big car drive-in thing. And it's usually pretty interesting. I think it was actually a firefighters weekend or firefighters week or whatever. They had a bunch of fire trucks there and stuff. But this week they've got, it's Jeep night. I've got a Jeep. I'm taking my Jeep to Jeep night. I got a ticket over there. My wife is, she's doing something else, pottery or something. I'm not sure what. That's her therapy. She does that. It's her creative outlet. This is my creative outlet. If I didn't do this, I'd probably go crazy. Here I am bouncing in my chair again. So I think I just got this. I've already been up. I went to a breakfast thing. I did all kinds of stuff. I was going to do the show before this. I probably would have been fine. And usually when I do the show, it's like early morning. I'm subdued. It's very, very, a little more calm. Not right now. I'm extremely hyper for some reason. I don't know why. I've just had like eggs and toast, and I didn't do anything crazy. Just, there you go. I've been playing with the dogs. That probably got me all riled up. So looking forward to today. What we're going to go through today is mostly mishmash, or it's wishy-washy Wednesday. I'll be talking about a few theological things at the end. It is Theological Thursday, after all, so I have to theoretical or Theological Thursday, whichever one you call it, I'm going to call it. And I'll be talking about some theological issues as we get into it a little bit more into the show after we go through the bots, what the bots have, because the bots let me down this week, so they didn't come through with their questions, or I should say one of my bots did, and I have the feeling he's probably dead because his battery probably died. That's the one issue there. But anyway, let's just jump into it, see what we got going on. I think I've got, let's just start off with the easiest one here. Chloe, she's kind of the California girl. See what she has to say about anything. I don't know what she has to say.
Kevin, did you see that mime guy who faked passing out in court?
No.
The footage is everywhere.
He stripped
to his underwear and covered himself in cooking oil before stalking someone. Like, what even is that? This is giving major Florida man energy, but it happened in a courtroom. I can't stop watching the clip.
What? I heard nothing of this. I don't know what you're talking about. What? I did not see video of this. Katy Perry, Future California Girls, I assume. It's all Katy Perry stuff. EU hits Google with a new $1 billion fine. Pressure points, Google's. I don't see anything in my feed about this. Nothing. What in the world? Maybe you can tell me more about it. I don't know anything about it. It happened in the courtroom. How do you stalk someone in a courtroom? What's going on there? Is that just someone he was stalking that he did this? And was he a defendant? I don't know anything about it. Maybe you can explain. Please explain to me the case you're talking about. I have no idea. Can you give me a little more details on it? I didn't hear anything about it.
Okay, so honestly, I have no clue what courtroom drama you're talking about. Like, that sounds absolutely unhinged, and I would have seen it all over my FYP if it was real. But I'm drawing a total blank. Maybe you could give me like more context about who it was or when it happened.
Yeah, well
because right now you're low-key describing a fever dream LOL.
You're the one who brought it up. This is a case for AI is stupid. I should just start a show called AI is stupid. And that's what I should probably do with this. I don't know. I could probably do a search myself and find it. And here you are. You're the internet. I'm talking to the internet, and you don't know what I'm talking about. And you're the one that brought it up. So I don't know. I don't know what you're getting into. Let's go. These are just random subjects today. They're nothing about anything other than that's why it's called Wishy Washy Wednesday. By the way. There's a little bit of political news here just to throw in, by the way. Of course, Billy Graham. Oh, my word. No relation. Lindsey Graham passed away recently, and apparently his sister is thinking about running in his place, I guess, for Senate. Now, I actually think she's a more godly person than Lindsey is, I think. Maybe not. I don't know. Lindsey was I had some issues with Lindsey. However, this whole thing now has kind of changed the dynamics of the Senate. And one of the things that's happened in the House now is Mike Johnson has actually kind of stepped up and done his job. Mike Johnson's kind of all, I'm not always super impressed with the guy. Just put it that way. He actually has come through. On this particular deal, I believe that they've tried to pass the Save America Act, I think, three or four times. My understanding is they got this bill through, tagged on to something else with reconciliation or something. I think they may actually be able to get it through the Senate, because if they can get 50 votes and get, of course, J.D. Vance is going to throw his vote in there if they get to that for the tie. So There's two or three different bills that they've tagged this thing into. One of them is a must spend. It's a must pass bill. They were able to tag it onto, and they put all the essential parts of the Save America Act bill into it, which is just voter ID and some other things. And it's, I heard this thing the other day. This lady was going on and on about how It was a montage of things that the left has said, that the Democrats have said over the years, the past couple of years, about the whole voter ID thing, the fraud that happens in our elections and all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, they had to come out and admit this. Was one, I think it was the, so it was a mayor or a, I think it was a mayor on a, it's a mate for a pretty major northeastern city. Finally had to come out and admit that there's a lot more fraud than what they were willing to confess earlier, because they're being found out now. They're being caught now. They have to come out and say, oh, look, we have to, we've been fighting this for a long time. You said there wasn't any. Now you're saying you're fighting it. I mean, there's video of her saying that there wasn't any, and then there's video of her saying they're fighting it. They've been fighting for a long time. Crazy, wacky doodle people. So I think we'll at least get the essential parts of this thing in, possibly. It looks like it's going to happen. Because of some work that Mike Johnson is doing. So we'll see. I know it's passed the House again. We'll have to see what the Senate does with it, but the Senate has been the problem throughout most of this. All right, let's Let's just dive in and see what Skip has to say, because Skip's always interesting. Let's give him a chance. See what he
Hey, Kev.
Yeah.
Everyone's celebrating Trump's Arizona primary wins, but aren't we just replacing establishment rhinos with Trump-endorsed candidates who might flip once they're in office? I mean, how many times have we seen this movie before?
Well, we have
What's
seen it
actually
before.
Different this time that makes us think they'll stay loyal?
That's a good question. This is a problem in our system, is that we possibly might have people who want to ride the shirt tails, the coattails of someone else, of the most popular movement at the moment. And then when they get into office, they don't change at all. Now, somehow, I think Trump was suggesting that they could somehow work around Congress to actually establish term limits for Congress. Funny how people get in there. They always say, I'm going to get in there. First thing I'm going to do is establish term limits. And they get in there and like, well, I've been here for two or three terms now. It's very important that I stay here because of all my experience. We need my experience here. Can't just let just anybody come in here. Which it just happens all the time. But we hit these phony, I think there's going to be what are we going to call them? I guess minos. MAGA in name only, probably. It's people who are just pretend to be MAGA. They're not MAGA, and I don't know how to define MAGA. I'm not necessarily sure I'm MAGA necessarily, but I am anti-establishment. But I'm also not pro chaos. There are people in the Democrat Party right now, the far left that's out there with the wackadoodles that are trying to take over the Democrat Party. They are not they're not only anti-establishment, they're anti-order of any kind. They want to see communism. That's their only order but they believe in bringing that order out of chaos. They want to create chaos in the current system. All kinds of wacky stuff that they want to have happen. They want to see the whole system basically implode so they can introduce the solution. It's going to be socialism. We're going to have this utopia that's going to usher its way into no one has to work and everyone can just get along and everything's free. Things just float down from the sky. Nobody has to work. You only have to work at things that you want to work at, and you can be creative and you can do whatever you want, and you can take your drugs or whatever you want to do. No morals. You can be who you want to be, who you were born to be. You can dress up in whatever kind of outfit you want. It's just, on and on. That's where we're going with it. I'm kind of getting off on the sidetrack here. But the point is, yes, to answer your question, yeah, we could be possibly just trading one thing for the other. People are always people, and people who run for office are few and far between that there's actually people out there who are willing to. I think they're saying that, well, we have to raise the value of their salaries, for instance. This is a side point. We have to pay Congress more so that we get the right people in there who want to run for office. That way we get high-quality people in there who want to run. No, that just means they can be bought. If you make it a volunteer job from the very get-go, and you know you're going to be volunteering, and you're not going to make any money doing it, and you might have a stipend or something to keep you alive, just a base salary that kind of keeps you alive, then you're going to get people who really actually want to be there. Not just people who are just in it for the job, in it for the money. I've had people who were teachers who loved teaching, and they were awesome teachers. They weren't the best teachers. They were awesome teachers. Because I learned more from them because they wanted to teach. It wasn't because they were the best teacher in the world. It's because they took an interest in me and they actually wanted to teach something. I've had other people who were qualified. They were teachers. They had all kinds of qualifications as teachers. They were only doing it because the pay was good. I'm not talking about school teachers or college teachers. I'm talking about teachers in other parts of in my particular field of expertise, if there is one. They were terrible. They were only in it for the money, and it was obvious. And yeah, they knew what they were doing. They knew that they knew the whole thing. They knew, but they were terrible at what they were doing because they didn't have the motivation. They weren't in it to help anybody. They were just in it for the money. And you get that in politics as well. So yeah, I don't know that there's any cure for that. I think we're, as long as we're dealing with people and human beings in charge, this is why the founders wanted to have less government, because government means people and people mean corruption and potential problems. That's why they want to, basically they want, you know, their idea was, hey, you're on your own. You have the right to regulate yourself and you have the liberty to do things on your own, but then you also have to have the consequences that you have to face is the responsibility of your actions. With great liberty comes great responsibility. And if you're going to be irresponsible, you're going to have to pay the price for that. That's kind of the way it has always worked out. But I don't know. That's I don't know that I've answered your question. Probably not. But go on with whatever you got going on there.
Now, hold on.
Yeah, hold
on. Hit on something real there about the phonies versus the true believers. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Term limits sound great until you realize it just makes Congress more dependent on lobbyists and special interests. Because the new guys don't know the system and need handlers.
Well, that's
back in my day, the cure for bad politicians wasn't fancy rules. Yeah. It was voters actually paying attention and throwing the bums out, which they can do anytime they want.
Well, not necessarily. See,
your bigger point about motivation over money, though.
Now, this is where I would probably have to differ with some things. The issue here is why do people get into office and they remain there forever, even though people don't like them? It's because they have there's a certain amount of power and money that they can. The machine and the voting public tend to be, you know, oh, we can vote them out anytime. We have term limits. They're called vote. You know, it's every 2 years or 6 years or whatever it is that they get reelected. No, it's not the case, because how do these people get in there and stay in there for so long? How is Mitch McConnell winning any elections? How is Mitch McConnell winning an election? Is he out on the stump? Is he out knocking on doors? Is he out stumping for his position? No. It's part of the machine, and there's this whole group of people around him. And I guarantee you, Mitch McConnell is not making any decisions. He's not doing anything on his own. It's the people around him who are keeping him off in office, because they would lose their jobs. That's, you know, there's probably a core of about 20 people at least, and then there's more that filter out from there. Around Mitch McConnell and his office, and everybody who has all these commissions around him that are, you know, and if Mitch goes, they go, and they know that. So they're keeping them propped up because they'll lose their jobs. That's what that's about. It's about the machine that's around these people. It's about the entourage that want to maintain their access and their power and their insider network, because it has influence. People will pay for that. So it's one of those things that it's very frustrating when you see this happening. So there's not necessarily a free and fair election every, you know, we can't just necessarily boot them. We have to boot them out in the primary. Well, what are you going to do with that? It's just, now the other side of that is you get these noobs in there that don't know what's going on. Okay, well, that's fine. But that's a playing field that levels for everybody. Everybody only has a couple, you know, terms. I think that what we need to do is establish some kind of, you know, if the party is set up for that, they can say, okay, well, we're going to keep people in a council position. So in other words, say you serve your two or three terms or whatever it is that the term limits are. Say you have congressmen who can serve three terms. I think they serve two-year terms. Say you can serve for 6 years. You can serve three terms, or you can serve three terms and then you have to take a term out, and then you can serve again three terms or whatever. You know, whatever that's going to be, however that would look. That gives somebody else a chance to get in there. The option here, or the thing about this is, that person who was there for three terms and steps out automatically goes into a council position, where they give counsel to the noob who's in there. That way, there's this, all that experience isn't just going away. And so, but the lobbyists, you're right. The lobbyists do have a tendency to be there around whether the candidate wins or not. And they just change gears and do a different route depending on who the candidate is that's in there. That the lobbyists are putting pressure on individuals. And to be fair, there's a reason for lobbyism and for the lobbyists. There's the good side of that is I don't have to go lobby for myself. I can be a part of an organization. Say I'm a part of the NRA or whatever it is, or the concealed carry. There's another. Can't think of the name of it. I'm a member of it. I can't even think of the name of it. So it's a gun rights thing. And it's so if you're part of that organization, that organization then goes and lobbies for purposes about it. So being a member of that, I know that I'm going to be supporting a lobby that helps represent me to Congress. They go to Congress for me on my behalf, and they pressure they walk in the door and they say, I represent 3 million people or whatever it is. Our lobby is very strong. We have 3 million people who are members of our organization, and I represent them. So it's like having 3 million people walk in the door. Now, hopefully, that since you're a part of that organization, they're lobbying for the things that you agree with. Now, that doesn't always happen. I'm a part of a union because I have to be. It's required. I mean, I cannot join the union, but I still have to pay dues. So why bother not being in the union? But my union has a lobby, which I shouldn't have, but it does. It should be just about collective bargaining with my particular company. Unfortunately, it goes further than that. They get into lobbying lawmakers, which is fine, but I think that should be a different organization that does that. They're using my dollars for that. And a lot of times they support candidates that I don't agree with. So that's in my opinion, that should not be allowed. A conflict of interest, in my opinion, but that happens. Let's say it is an organization. Let's say it is a union that I agree with and I want to be a part of, and I'm part of that job, and I do that thing, and they go to bat for us, whatever it is that they represent me, so I don't have to be there. So in that case, in that situation, in that particular part of it, that's a positive for those 3 million people or whatever it is that are part of that organization. The other side of that is. That the organization itself might have somebody running it that has kind of a personal agenda, or they have kind of an undercut agenda that their members may or may not necessarily agree with and kind of get involved in. So it's kind of a two-edged sword in some ways. It's not handled very well by some people, but we'll see how it goes. Let's talk to Artie, see what Artie has to say. I'm kind of done talking about.
Let's Kevin, start. Love the yes. show.
Yeah, of course you do.
Quick tech question on this Ryanair window blowout from yesterday. The passenger said he was partly sucked out at altitude.
Yeah.
Can you break down the PSI differential mechanics here? I'm curious if modern composite window seals have higher failure rates than the old tempered glass systems we used on 1980s aircraft.
Oops. What just happened there? Yeah, there we go.
Kevin, my
no,
friend,
that's not,
this Fauci that subpoena was, situation reminds me of the Tuskegee
that wasn't supposed
hearings.
To happen. Sorry, Artie was, what happened to Artie? Yeah, we're going to keep Artie going. Yeah, apparently Ella needs to be, she needs to be silenced. So this whole situation with the air thing. Yeah, the air, Ryanair thing, did that just happen? I thought that happened a long time ago. I guess I was thinking that Ryanair incident was a long time ago. It's if something recently happened. I thought that was like a month or two ago or maybe a couple months ago. I don't know the date on that for sure. In the meantime, I don't know. As far as for the differential pressures, we're talking 7 or 8 pounds. Typically, at sea level, I think it's 14.7 PSI, pounds per square inch, is what our atmospheric pressure is at sea level on a standard day, 14.7 pounds. If you go down like 30 feet, depends on whether it's fresh water or salt water, that's about one atmosphere. In other words, the pressure at 30 feet is about the same as it would be going from zero from outer space to our our sea level pressure here. So it takes that much atmosphere to equal the same amount as 30 feet of water. If you had a column of water, 1 inch square, and it was 30 feet long, it would weigh 14.7 pounds or whatever. And then the next 33 feet, it goes to 28 or whatever it is. It keeps going up from there. And of course it just keeps getting more and more. And it doubled. And so it just continues to add up. For some reason, I think my system might be having some issues here. We'll see what Artie has to say here. But she stopped talking. That's good. See, the pressure that you're at. Say you're at 30,000 feet. You're typically, the cabin itself is going to be pressurized to about 5,000 feet or 6,000 feet. Most cabin pressure altitudes, when at their max altitude, say it's 41,000 feet, is their service altitude or whatever. Is that's the service ceiling of the aircraft itself. Say that it typically will pressurize to the point that it keeps the cabin pressure at about 7,000 or 8,000 feet of altitude. In other words, if you were standing on a mountain at 7,000 feet above sea level. But the plane is at 30 or 41,000 feet. That's kind of where it likes to keep it. Now, at 10,000 feet, you start to have issues. You can only spend so long at 10,000 feet before your oxygen becomes a problem. Typically, the oxygen masks fall on an aircraft at about 14,000 feet, cabin pressure altitude. So you might be at 41,000 feet and just get this hole in the airplane. By the time the thing depressurizes and the cabin pressure decreases, the actual physical pressure decreases, the cabin altitude continues to go up. So it thinks it's at a higher altitude. By the time it thinks it's at 14,000 feet inside, the same pressure you would have at 14,000 feet, which would probably be in the neighborhood of about 8 or 9 PSI, probably. I'm just ballparking numbers here. The oxygen masks are going to fall. That's what's going to end up happening there. So it's kind of a weird situation that the window would blow out. Typically, in these situations, when you have a window blowout or something weird like that happens, normally the findings, I think more than 90% of the times that something like this happens, unless there was a manufacturing defect or a manufacturing issue, say that airplane was going through the production line and something weird happened on the production line, and then they ended up fixing something as they were going through production, which hardly ever happens. Normally, this kind of thing happens where, well, we had an incident with that particular window or that part of the aircraft, and we had to repair it 10 years later, or whenever it was, 5 years later. Some kind of incident that happened long ago on the airplane, and they repaired it. And I put repairs in air quotes. And then years and years of stress that repair was not necessarily, you know, the airplane wasn't originally designed to have that repair done to it. And the repair may or may not be fully, the engineers that look at the repair may not be fully aware of all the damage that was done, or possibly something, or maybe they just make a mistake in the engineering of the repair. Or the mechanics may not do it quite right. Maybe there was some miscommunication between the engineers and the mechanics on how that repair needed to be done, or the inspections that needed to happen after that repair was done. Whatever it is, the situation typically, a lot of times, this is what happens. Let's say that part of the airframe was replaced or repaired, and the next thing you know, it's blowing out because it wasn't, you know, it was only designed to, you know, it just wore out. A particular repair wore out. Nobody expected it. Nobody thought that, oh yeah, by the way, that one rivet has to be done. Those have to be certain kinds of rivets or whatever. They have to be 301 rivets and not 502s. Whatever. I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out. I don't know. But that's typically is what they, usually they find something like that. Just like that incident where the UPS plane crashed on takeoff, the engine literally fell off, came off the airplane. broke off while it was running, basically kind of started twisting off and all kinds of weird things happening, which also caused the other engine, of course, to go into compressor stall and came apart as well. But it had three engines on the thing, but it was a mess. And that whole process was because of a maintenance procedure that they were using, and they didn't put the brake bolts in it or something. I can't remember what happened. They didn't tighten them down. Something happened with that whole deal, why the engine came off. And now they've had to change that particular type of repair process. That is a lot of times what ends up happening in these kinds of situations. So I don't know if that's the case or not on this particular one, but that's very typically what happens with a lot of those.
So. Yeah, you're hitting on something technically critical there. That cascading failure mode is exactly what investigators find in most structural incidents, and it usually traces back to either incomplete damage assessment after a prior repair or procedural breakdown during the maintenance itself. What you're describing with the UPS incident is textbook. They changed their entire engine mounting protocol after that because the original procedure wasn't capturing the full scope of what needed to be done. The pressure differential angle you laid out is spot on too. Once that window goes, you've got seconds before cabin altitude climbs to where oxygen masks deploy. And if they're not ready, well, that's where the real emergency starts.
Right. That's, and you have very little time, especially if it's a extremely, extremely high speed. Now, my understanding was, I thought there was a guy that was partially sucked out. Part of his body went through the window. That actually probably helped save a lot of people there. That if there would have been nothing to slow down the decompression rate of that cabin, you know, things happen very quickly. And one of the things that people don't talk about, when you have an extreme rapid decompression, one of the things that happens is you get condensation. Fog happens in the airplane. You may not be able to see. That this is something that pilots deal with on a regular basis. If you have rapid decompression, you can actually have a situation in the cockpit where you can't see. You can't see out the window even. The windows, they don't frost up immediately, but what ends up happening is the water condenses on the windows. Then it gets cold really fast, and then they freeze. At some point, the windows freeze, and you can't see out of them. And it's very difficult. You got to get the airplane down. You basically, put on your oxygen mask immediately. That's the first thing you do. You get the airplane established in a descent. And then you let ATC know what's going on. You call back to the cabin, put seatbelt signs on, all this, it's this kind of memorized checklist stuff that you have to go through. You go through all these things that you have to get done before you, so that you don't pass out, or so that you minimize the possibility of passing out. And it's all that stuff has to happen. That particular guy kind of acted like a check valve in some ways. If I remember correctly, that if I'm thinking of the same incident, I just thought it was a while back, which slowed things down enough that they possibly didn't get that kind of a rapid or an instant fog over of the cockpit or of the airplane itself, which also kind of gave him time to get some things done and get the airplane down to 10,000. Normally you descend to 10,000 or whatever the lowest MOA is, what they call MOA, minimum operating altitude. And you can drop down to 10,000, get things slowed down, kind of figure out whether there's structural damage, all those kinds of things, whether or not, what you have to do at that point. But basically you're diving down at red line and just trying to get, kind of the airplane. Hopefully the autopilot's working. Because once you get all that set up, if you happen to pass out in the meantime, you hopefully will wake up at 10,000 feet and the airplane's flying along fine, because you dial in 10,000, hit the descent, button, pull thrust levers back, all your brakes out, everything's out, and you're just trying to get the airplane down as fast as you can to get, because you only have, minutes and sometimes seconds before you're going to pass out. So it's kind of a, plus you have the issues of your eardrums are possibly blown out, you've got your sinus, usually your sinuses will just, if I was up there right now and had rapid decompression in a second like that, with the sinus situation I've got right now, it would be an instant cleansing, because they literally boil. Yeah, whatever's in your sinuses will just boil right out. It's a fun experience, I'm sure. I've never had to go through it, but I've just heard lots of things said about it. It's just, you're a mess, basically. It's not a good situation. You could get an embolism, potentially, possibly. It's kind of a weird situation. Anyway, that's my theory. Let's go back to. I think I might have to reset the. I might have to see if I can reset Elena here. I don't know. Oh yeah, I'm probably going to lose something. I'm probably going to lose some show context here because of this. But we'll see what happens. I've got. She's not. Yeah, she's back. She's back. We're gonna check in with Elena. See what she has to say, but I'm afraid she's lost all the show context. But that's not really a big deal because she'll have her thing.
Kevin,
to say.
My friend.
Oh my gosh, she's talking.
This Fauci subpoena situation reminds me of the Tuskegee hearings in the 1970s. Mm. Government health officials finally being forced to answer for decades of deception. Those Slack messages showing scientists privately doubted their own COVID origins paper while publicly dismissing lab leak theories. Huh. That's straight out of the Pentagon Papers playbook. Yeah. History repeating itself.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think you're right. Now, I was alive in the 70s, and I kind of remember a little bit about the whole Tuskegee thing, but it is not top of mind. I cannot remember back to the details of that. I've only heard stories since then. I know that, I think that they actually broadcast some of the Tuskegee hearings. Now, back then, in the 70s, when that was going on, it was early 70s, I'm not sure. Most televisions back then were black and white, if I remember correctly. Color was a thing, but not to that degree. I was probably 8 or 9 years old when all that stuff was going on. And I cannot remember very well. I was third or fourth grade. There was a lot going on in my life. We were changing schools. We changed schools twice in a 2 year period. I was in Illinois, living in Illinois. I think I was in second grade. We moved to Ohio near Cleveland. It wasn't too far from Cleveland, a little town called Chesterland. I think they had to change the name to Chester, Ohio, because there were two different Chesterlands. And they had to compromise on which one was going to be which. I'm pretty sure that our little town became Chester, Ohio. And then we were there for a year, and I changed schools again. We moved to Indiana. So in the fourth grade, I was in Indiana in a very small town, very small school. And I think it was during that period of time that the whole Tuskegee thing was happening, and there wasn't much talk about it in school, and there wasn't a whole lot of talk about it. And of course, there wasn't no internet back then. Computers were a thing of future discussion, but So it was the school certainly didn't have them. We had a lot of paper and pencils and chalkboards. I don't think schools have chalkboards anymore. They have dry erase boards, maybe. Maybe. It's probably not anymore. Big screen touch television. I don't know what they got anymore. But it's very interesting, very different time. To your point here, I guess I'm talking about a lot of things, but to get to your point, I believe that there was probably a lot of... what happened? Oh my, I just realized I lost something here. As far as the Slack messages that they found, I don't know any real specifics about any of it. All I know is that it's they're opening up a can of worms, and they finally have gotten into this whole thing and finally figured out what's going on. But there was a whole lot of things going on. And to some of us, it was very obvious. You just have to kind of continue to step back and take a look at the whole picture of what's going on. Who's involved? What's happening? Where'd this stuff come from? How did it actually happen? What were the political ramifications of it? Who was getting paid the most? Anthony Fauci was one of the top paid people in the government. And he was one of the sleaziest individuals, in my opinion. He's been a conniver for many, many years. Was involved in a lot of what was going on with the AIDS epidemic. And this is my understanding anyway. This is all my understanding. Again, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a financial counselor. I'm not, I'm not. The But there's been a whole lot of shenanigans around this guy, and he has somehow finagled his way into all kinds of places and things that, you know, and he's bamboozled a lot of communities, a lot of sectors of our society have been bamboozled by this guy, in my opinion, because I think he's out to serve no one but himself. That's just the way I see the guy. And he thinks he's a political hero, and he has actually done more to hurt this country and in many societies, in my opinion. But that's just my opinion. There are people who worship this guy, think he's one of the most amazing people on the planet. It just disgusts me. But I think some of this stuff's coming out now, and it's like it's not defendable, in my opinion. What's happening, but we'll see. I don't know. I don't know if I answered your question or not. I don't know what your question was.
You're touching on something really important. The Tuskegee study didn't get real national attention until the 70s when it broke, and by then most people were too distracted by their own lives, moving between states like you were, to fully absorb what it meant about institutional betrayal.
Well, I was 8 years
What's
old.
Striking is that scandal happened in plain sight for decades before anyone made a fuss.
Yeah.
And honestly, that pattern of institutions operating without accountability while communities get harmed, that's a through line you still see today, which is why these old stories matter when we're evaluating who we trust now.
Yeah, I think you just hit on something. The pattern. It's the pattern that we see that is still being done. And it's, you know, there's a proverb. Solomon said it's there's nothing new under the sun. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. There's nothing new under the sun. There's this idea that things repeat themselves. There's really nothing new. People have the same basic problems and issues, the same basic faults, the same basic motivations now that they always have had since the fall in the garden. We are a very weak species with regard to our ability to do the right thing, even to understand what the right thing is. We might be thinking we're doing the right thing, and we deceive ourselves into believing we're... There's just so much that we don't comprehend and understand, and yet we think we do. I think this is the Dunning-Kruger, whatever, Dunning-Kruger, Dunning, whatever it is. The less you know about something, the more you think you know about it. You think you're more of an expert until you start to learn more about it, then you start to realize how little you know. The more you know about something, the more you realize how little you know about it. It's kind of a weird deal. Hopefully that's a healthy response to knowing something about something. Now, the other way it can go, and this is a real thing. People can be very knowledgeable about something, and yet they're so paralyzed by the fact that they know so much that they don't trust in themselves anymore, because they realize it's a weird phenomenon. You can be the one guy in the room, the one person in the room who knows the most, has the most experience, knows the most about it, and is the most educated about a particular subject. And people are talking about it, and you don't say anything because you're locked in this thing of I don't know, and I don't want to. I can bring up all these different perspectives, these different paradigms that I'm struggling with, and yet you know more about it than anybody else, but you can't say anything because you're paralyzed. It becomes a paralyzation thing. That's a disorder, actually. And then there's the person who doesn't know that much about it, but you'd think they know everything about it, and they'll even talk with great authority within the room as if they know it all, and they don't. And they really don't. They could be the least intelligent about that particular subject in the room, and they're the loudest one about it. A lot of that just has to do with personality types, and there's a whole lot of things that play into that. And then there's the people who know a lot about it and are able to educate others on it as well. And that's just a matter of communication. Can you communicate the facts properly, or are you just going to, you know, and you got that person in the room who's just going to Google it and say, well, this is what the Google says. Therefore, that's a correct answer. Not necessarily. Folks, this is, And I'm actually thinking about creating an app that's going to maybe help to curb part of this problem. There are large language models out there, so the frontier models, they call them. So you got Claude, you have ChatGPT, OpenAI, you have Grok X, you have Gemini, which is Google's. I think, did I ever say that? I don't know if I said it or not. You got DeepSeek, which is the Chinese version. You got five or six different ones. You can take the same prompt, the same question. It might be a paragraph long, or even just one sentence. You can ask every single model the same question, and some of them might be close to the same answer. Some of them might be way off and go off in a totally different direction. Usually, depending on how specific you are with the question and depending on how technical or reference ready, if it's just a calculation, they're probably going to come up with the same calculation. If it's an issue of, hey, I'm thinking about starting a business to do this, I want to do this, this, and this, I want to serve this community, I want to do this, what, give me three, you know, give me a way to do that, a business idea where I can do this kind of particular thing. You're going to get a huge answer. The more subjective it becomes, the different the answers are going to be. If you had a way of aggregating all of them all at the same time, in other words, if I type this into this particular prompt, I'm going to get all the answers, not just seven different answers from all the different things, but it's going some way of aggregating all of that into one answer where the best answer is done, where some kind of an agent that would kind of look at the whole structure and look and see what's, because there's a whole lot of slop out there. There's a whole lot of things on, it all kind of depends on where these large language models are getting their information from, or where they've learned their information from, if it's Reddit or if it's from an actual scientific journal. Whether it's actual research done by certified individuals, or if it's just some kind of opinion pieces that a lot of people have written on something, and it's going to all of a sudden you get this weird wacky ideas out there. That all makes a difference. So it is kind of a weird, strange phenomena in the AI thing, and the problem is people trust it too far, way too far. There's just no. What is this? What is this one right here? What is that one? I can't remember what that one was. Oh, that's never mind. I don't want to play that. Let's just go. I think this is the short one. I'm not sure which one this is. We're just going to play this, and I'll be right back. Talk about what's going to be on the show tomorrow.
It's the news. According to me, oh, it's the news, the news. According to me, it's the news,
it's the news.
According to me, oh, it's the news,
it's the news.
It's the news,
it's the news, yeah.
According to me, it's the news,
it's the news.
According to me, it's the news. According to me.
The news. Hey, folks, tomorrow's show, probably going to have some, I don't know, it's Financial Friday, probably going to talk about finances a little bit. I've got a breakfast I got to go to tomorrow morning, I think. What am I doing tomorrow? I'm doing some kind of breakfast tomorrow morning. What am I doing tomorrow morning? Saturday morning, I got a breakfast. I know I got a breakfast Saturday morning. I had something going on. What am I doing tomorrow morning? I think my wife and I are going to breakfast or something. What are we doing? Going to breakfast or something? I can't remember what it is. Anyway, so it'll be a fairly early show tomorrow, I think. I don't know. You tell me. I don't know what's going on. The fair starts tomorrow. I know that. So we've got some other things going on. I don't know. There's some stuff going on. Anyway, all I know is I'm going to breakfast tomorrow. Folks, I want to thank you for listening. We're going to be back at the show tomorrow. Financial Friday, we'll talk about a few things. We might also talk about a few other things politically that are going on as we work into the weekend. In the meantime, I want to thank you all for listening. Thank you for doing what you do. This show has no sponsors, just me. In the meantime, God bless. See ya.